It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The Maduro regime is launching an investigation into opposition leader Juan Guaido, trying to freeze his accounts and prevent him from leaving the country.
There is a citizen that has practically led and organized all this action that is causing Venezuela's detriment.
National Security Advisor John Bolton tweeted the United States denounces the threats against Guaido and that, quote, there will be serious consequences for those who attempt to subvert democracy and harm Guaido. Nicolas Maduro, the disputed president, is pressing Guaido as the United States presses Maduro to yield power. This morning, the State Department announced Guaido now controls Venezuelan accounts at U.S.-insured banks, including the Federal Reserve Bank in New York.
What we're trying to do is to cut off the money to the regime that should not be in power and make sure that President Guaido has access to funds and has access to the assets of the country and to make sure we protect these assets for the people of Venezuela.
It's also an attempt to firm up Guaido's legitimacy and convince Venezuelan officials to abandon Maduro, especially military leaders who say they stand behind him. For his part, Maduro announced he plans to strengthen the nation's armed militia in response to growing tension with the United States. About 24 countries have joined the United States in recognizing Guaido as Venezuela's interim president. American adversaries China, Russia, and others back Maduro.
We expect the attempts by Cuba, Russia, and to some extent China, to prop up the Maduro regime's security or financing will lead to additional efforts to exploit the situation in exchange for access mostly to Venezuelan oil.
Russia has invested billions in Venezuela and remains critical of U.S. sanctions against Maduro and backing of Guaido. Less than a week after withdrawing some of its staff from Venezuela, the State Department raised its travel advisory today, warning Americans not to go there because of civil unrest, crime, and the arbitrary arrest of U.S. citizens.
That was Rich Edson of Fox News. Sandy Rios with you this morning. We had followed Venezuela's situation pretty closely up until recently, and I haven't really talked about it very much. But just to remind you, Cuba had been cooperating with Maduro, and before that, Chavez, to help Chavez win the election, win his dictatorship through a democratically allegedly orderly process, and then immediately taking over the businesses and over the Supreme Court, and just it's kind of the new method of takeover rather than armed battle in Central and South America. Rather than these revolutions by arms, they have learned to use the democratic process. That's how Chavez got in, and Chavez then began to take more and more power, and pretty soon the people are starving and there's a murder in the streets. It's just been a nightmare. And it is exhibit A of why our young people must be told and must be taught why socialism doesn't have a good end. We're going to be talking about Venezuela a lot tomorrow with Dr. Paul Coyer. He's been with us before, and we're going to be talking a little bit, some insight on the ground of what's happening there. But there is a story that Rich did not tell that came out. I don't know if it came out overnight, fresh off the press, and that is that $840 million in gold bars were spotted at an airport in Venezuela loading on a Russian jet. 20 tons of gold from Venezuela's central bank was ready to be hauled away Tuesday on Russia's airline Boeing 777 that landed in Caracas a day earlier. And that was the reason we know that is because it was tweeted by a member of a lawmaker who I'm sure probably didn't want his name may not have wanted his name out, but now they're saying he was a former economist at the country's central bank and has close ties to workers still there. So this 20 million tons of gold, it was on the airport getting ready to be loaded into a jet, an airline that does not travel to Caracas, Venezuela. So it's unusual on all counts, And the observation is made in this article that Venezuela owes Russia tons of money. I think Rich probably said that just a few minutes ago also. And so nobody quite knows what this is all about. Reminds me of when President Obama got billions of dollars in cash and various other forms of payment to the Iranian leadership. Wasn't that something? And we allowed that to happen, and there was no dust up, and that was just fine for many people. It was just a horrible thing that President Obama did, because Iran is the number one sponsor of terrorists in the entire world. But that's a sidebar. But here we have kind of the same thing, but different. So tomorrow we'll talk about Venezuela at great length. I felt like when I was listening to the top of the news, AFR News, which they do such a great job, they were saying what I was going to say to you. So I'm going to repeat it in case some of you did not hear it. But Pakistan's top court Tuesday upheld the acquittal of this Christian woman, Bibi, who was accused of blaspheming the prophet. You know, it's blasphemy laws. She's been under this ordeal since 2009. She simply brought water to fellow farmhands who refused to drink water from a Christian woman. And then they went after her with a vengeance. And she's got children. It's been a nightmare. And people involved with her have been killed. A lot of people have been killed. A judge has been killed. Death threats. It's just causes riots. And now she's finally been acquitted. The judges say that she was falsely accused. So, but it's caused quite an uproar in Pakistan. And the blasphemy laws, look, we are sort of like accepting that the Middle East has blasphemy laws because Islam is the dominant religion. But the thing that scares me and should scare all of us is that the European Union is moving to quantify in law these blasphemy laws and Hillary Clinton was right in the center of all this, to make it illegal to say bad things about the prophet. Remember, President Obama made this speech, I believe at the UN, something about it won't end well for people who criticize the prophet. And when we were all like, what? That's blasphemy law right out of Islam, right out of the Quran. And here's a shocker. You may remember, probably 6 months ago, maybe a year, we talked to Elizabeth Sabadish-Wolf from Austria, very articulate. She was fighting against the Islamic influence that was growing in Austria, and she was very concerned about her safety at the time. Well, since we talked with Elizabeth, and I hope we can talk to her again, she has been found guilty as blasphemy against the prophet in the European Union court, the EU court. Elizabeth Sabadish-Wolf, an Austrian citizen, has now been found guilty of breaking these blasphemy laws. I can't give you more information beyond that, but I just wanted to illustrate to you, in this moment I can't, I wanted to illustrate to you how dangerous this is. And we haven't talked about that in a long time. I've tracked, you know, the radical Islamic movement. I wouldn't even call it that. I'd say the Sharia movement. It's not so radical. It's pretty mainstream Islam. And it's potential dangers for this country, and you can bet that we'll be back to that topic also. This is an incredible story, which I'm not sure you've heard this one, but boy, should you. This is from the Jerusalem Post. It came out 2 days ago, and this is what it says. A cure for cancer? Israeli scientists say they think they've found one. A small team of Israeli scientists think they might have found the first complete cure for cancer. We believe we will offer in a year's time a complete cure for cancer, said Dan Arador, of a new treatment being developed by his company, Accelerated Evolution Biotechnologies, which was founded in 2000 in the iTech Incubator in the Wiseman Science Park. And let me just pause to say, I have been to the Wiseman Science Park in, I think it's outside of Tel Aviv. It is just unbelievable. If ever there were, I'm going to use impolitic words here because I just wanted to describe it. If there were ever a superhuman race in terms of brain power, it must be the Israelis. I mean, what they are developing at the Wiseman Science Park is mind-boggling. I remember hearing a lecture, or not a lecture, but it was a private, it was journalists, and I was on a journalist tour. There's probably seven of us. They talked about what they've learned about the human brain, which maybe it's news to you, but scientists don't know much about the human brain. When you consider all there is to know, they don't know very much. And the incredible research they were doing at Wiseman Science Park, I will never forget that. And so this project, this cure for cancer, is coming out of, at least it was initiated, out of Wiseman Science Park. And just to put this in perspective, you will not be surprised by these stats. Every single one of you has a friend or a family member, or you yourself have been diagnosed with cancer. 18.1 million new cancer cases are diagnosed worldwide each year. In fact, the International Agency for Research says that every sixth death in the world is due to cancer. It's the second cause of death, second only to cardiovascular disease. So the way they say this works, they're calling it the mutato, multi-target toxin, mutato. It's too complicated. It's a very long article. And by the way, we'll put this on our Facebook page because it's worth repeating, don't you think? The Jerusalem Post, a cure for cancer. Israeli scientists say they think they have found one. They say that this is kind of the comparable to an antibiotic for cancer. And it's a quick treatment. It's not like a series of radiology treatments or a chemo. It's the fact they say that the patient probably could stop treatment after maybe, say, a couple of weeks. They've been trying it on mice. They're getting ready to do the experiments on humans. And they say maybe in 2 years. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? And I don't think this is blowing smoke, because after being at the Wiseman Science Park and seeing what they're doing, I can't imagine them doing a press release on something like this unless they were really serious about it. So this is not a fringe group. And so I'm just saying, you know, for those of you, you know, in various stages or having just gotten bad news, or even for our future, this is an amazing story, and we'll be following that, won't we? The whole world is going to be following that one. So we'll put that on our Facebook page. And then, of course, you heard at the top of the show, the Joe Grimaldi, the Houston Police Officers Union, I don't know if he's the president. Yes, the president. He did a press conference yesterday, and it's just been a stunning inspiration to policemen everywhere. And the aftermath of the shooting of those five Houston police officers, I think Sunday night. I want you to hear his full statement, at least most of it. Let's listen.
Well, let me just thank the community. The outpouring of support has once been amazing. It shows why Houston's the greatest city in the world. I want to thank Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who already contacted us to make sure these officers are doing all right. And I want to thank all of our partners at HFD, all the officers out on that scene, who all played a crucial role in getting them down here. And certainly thank you to the medical staff, the world-class medical staff here that are taking care of our officers. But now I want to speak on behalf of the 5,200 brave men and women of the Houston Police Department and the other 800,000 police officers that are working these streets every single day, putting their lives on the line. We are sick and tired of having targets on our back. We are sick and tired of having dirtbags trying to take our lives when all we're trying to do is protect this community and protect our families. Enough is enough. And if you're the ones that are out there spreading the rhetoric that police officers are the enemy, well, just know we've all got your number now. We're going to be keeping track of all of y'all, and we're going to make sure that we hold you accountable every time you stir the pot on our police officers. We've had enough, folks. We're out there doing our jobs every day, putting our lives on the line for our families. Enough is enough. Now, please, keep these officers in your prayers.
Yeah, so two officers, as I understand it, are still in clinging to their lives. Joe Grimaldi, the spokesman or the president for the Houston Police Officers Union. And, of course, the response from policemen around the country is meaningful for them to hear someone articulate the way they're feeling. And Omaha Police Officers Association tweeted in response, "Great and meaningful words coming from a great man and leader." Another tweet, "Your speech was spot on, dangerous rhetoric, allowing people to think they are above the law for any reason. We have to fight back. We have to support our police, and we will descend into chaos." I have a lot more to tell you today, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's American Family Association President Tim Wildman.
Lynn Ingram and Jim Duncan, two Texans, support and believe in our ministry here at AFA and AFR?
We know more about the laundry business than anything else. We know a little bit about a lot of things, but we know a lot about the laundry and dry cleaning business.
They created a laundry detergent to sell to folks to support AFA.
We just want to be able to provide a product that can be used by AFA to support the ministry.
When you wash your family's clothes with Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent, you can take great satisfaction in knowing that you're supporting the vital work of the American Family Association. It's a unique way to increase your giving to AFA. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more about the Redeem Clean products when you visit redeemclean.afastore.net.
The first and last time I went skiing, they put me on a major slope without giving me a lesson. My friends were Swiss. They figured everybody knows how to ski. As I was flying down that slope, I realized nobody showed me how to stop. I prayed, "Lord, if you get me down, I'll never do this again." He did, and I haven't. Kind of different with my sin. I've often told the Lord that if He got me through it, I would never do it again. He has, and I've done it again. I pray, "Lord of second and third chances, it's me again." He never turns me away. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Hi, this is Todd Stearns from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu.
Many years ago, a wise newspaper editor asked me a question about what kind of journalist I wanted to be. Would you rather be first or would you rather be right? In other words, don't rush to judgment. Make sure you have the full story. The other day, a group of young boys was publicly shamed by the national media, liberals and conservatives. They accused the students from Covington Catholic High School in Kentucky of mocking a Native American activist and shouting down a group of Black Israelites. But it turns out there was more to the story. Other videos showed the Native Americans intentionally pushing their way into the crowd of teens, and the Black Israelites were spewing homophobic slurs, calling the kids all sorts of hateful names. You can watch the video for yourself at ToddStearns.com. There was a rush to judgment here, folks, and I suspect it was because many of the boys in the crowd were wearing Make America Great Again hats, and that's deplorable. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
With the conference committee set to begin negotiations tomorrow, Democrats today fired a warning shot across the president's bow. Don't shutter the government again.
No more shutdown. President Trump touched a hot, hot stove. And hopefully, he won't do it again.
On that point, there seemed to be the first glimmer of bipartisan agreement.
I don't like shutdowns. I'd be open to anything that we could agree on a bipartisan basis that would make them pretty hard to occur again.
The White House believes President Trump has the high ground in negotiations. According to a poll commissioned by the RNC, voters in 10 Democratic congressional districts won by President Trump in 2016 support the president on border security. And the White House believes Democrats in those districts may have a hard time denying the president. The GOP poll showed his approval rating at 49%, while theirs was anywhere from 20 to 35%. The wild card? How tight a grip Nancy Pelosi has on her caucus.
The real question will be, will she allow the bill to come to the floor if we come to an agreement inside the conference? Even if she disagrees with it, but her conference supports it.
Okay, that was John Roberts on Fox. And just a few observations of that first part of that. You hear Chuck Schumer talking about the shutdown. The president should have learned his lesson, never do that again. You hear Mitch McConnell much more mild about it. He usually sounds like Chuck Schumer about how horrible, no good shutdowns are. But could I point out to you that they are the ones, and I'll pick on McConnell again because he is the one who has dug his heels in repeatedly on trying to shut down the government to make a point. I remember when Planned Parenthood, those undercover videos of them dealing and trafficking in baby body parts, those horrendous videos came out, 2 years ago? Even for that, the Republican leadership who were in charge then, both houses, not a shutdown. Even for that, we know that, this is like horrendous. This is like Nazi-like, the sale of human body parts, but no, we, above all things. But see, a shutdown, the political move of a shutdown should be that you use that opportunity to make your point. In both houses of Congress, you bring people forward. You bring victims of, in terms of immigration and the wall, you bring the angel moms. You bring out hospitals to testify about the load on their emergency rooms. You bring local mayors to talk about the effects on their local infrastructure and their state, things that they have to give to people that need help, indigent people who, American citizens, are, get to the back of the line because the illegal immigrant population is swallowing up those resources. You could have those things happening. You could have it in the Senate. You could have it in the House. But what did Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy do? They did nothing. Well, they did nothing. And by the way, they did nothing. And then they have the audacity. The president shuts, the government is shut down because the Democrats won't agree to any border funding. And they just go silent. They take vacation. They leave early. They do the same things that the Democrats are doing and did not use the moment at all on purpose, because I honestly believe they don't want strong border security because they're all tied to big money interests. And I'll make my point in a second. I will. And so they roundly condemned these shutdowns because they did nothing to make the most of the shutdown, because it was a move to try to get the attention of the American people. But it didn't. It didn't, because they didn't do their job. What's the president? Is he really supposed to do all of this all by himself, really? And, of course, surrounding him in the White House are people that don't, they're not, Mick Mulvaney's not good on immigration. Jared Kushner is a Democrat, a very liberal Democrat. He's surrounded there. Yes, there's good people in there. Stephen Miller is a hawk on immigration, as are a few other people. But there's a divide of a divide, if I could go further. John Roberts has more to his report. Let's listen to it before I fill in more of the blanks. Here it is.
At a dinner last night with President Trump, Vice President Pence, and the Treasury Secretary, Senator Lindsey Graham floated the idea of adding an increase in the debt ceiling to any deal on a border barrier. The deadline to raise the debt ceiling is March 1st.
We're winning on the wall and lost the shutdown. By February the 15th, we're going to have a deal that would be good for the country, including the president's priorities, but also things Democrats want, or he will pursue building the wall on his own as commander-in-chief.
White House officials say the president and vice president were open and receptive to the idea. The Senate majority leader said it's worth considering.
I'm for whatever works, which means avoiding a shutdown and avoiding the president feeling he should declare a national emergency.
Chuck Schumer, on the other hand, thought it was a terrible idea, reaching for one of his favorite metaphors.
The debt ceiling, no more hostages to say, open up the government or I'll do this or this. And so, I think that's not a good idea.
Democrats insist they want to hear from the experts on border security so that they can make up their minds on what works best. And while there have been some individual conversations so far, the conference committee has not asked anyone from Customs and Border Protection, who are the experts on border security, to come up to Capitol Hill and brief them.
Because I think they pretty much know what they want. And back to Lindsey Graham. Remember, he's not called Grahamnesty for nothing. Lindsey Graham was part of the Gang of Eight that tried to undercut the American people during the Bush administration to come to some kind of a Marco Rubio. I think it was the Bush administration. Forgot what year it was. It all kind of melts together. But Marco Rubio, tremendous disappointment on that, as he joined the Democrats, along with Lindsey, to try to reach a compromise, because compromise is so important in Washington. We must give the Democrats something that they want. Actually, what happens is the Democrats under Republican leadership get everything they want, and we get generally, we meaning the American people, get basically nothing. So Lindsey Graham had dinner with the president, and he says the president's ready for a bigger border deal. In other words, his dream, Lindsey Graham's dream, is to have a comprehensive plan. Comprehensive always means bringing in more people. It just does. That doesn't mean that Lindsey Graham's against a wall. I'm not saying that. I don't know that. Although he is so inconsistent, you can't trust him. That's the problem. He does some wonderful things, and then he'll turn around and do some terrible things. So we never know quite what we're going to get. He says that President Trump has said that if he doesn't get more than $1.3 billion for border security, he will take action on his own. Well, how's that for putting your cards on the table so that everybody knows exactly where the president stands? Is that smart? I'm just wondering, is that smart? So the president will settle for $1.3 billion. That's what Lindsey is saying. Senator Graham is saying. And of course, what's happening is this, and this is really probably the most distressing part of the story to me. The president has asked Jared Kushner to come in and broker this deal. And Jared, of course, is a liberal Democrat, as I said before, connected to the money interests that do not want there to be secure borders because they want cheap labor. It's really, that's just as simple. It is that way. And I have to say that Vice President Pence is part of this too. So we've got Jared Kushner, Vice President Pence. We have Kirstjen Nielsen, who I know she's Department of Homeland Security, but I know that Kirstjen has been undercutting the president ever since she was appointed. She was a controversial appointee for many of us because she's bad on border security and she's bad on amnesty too. So we've got those three. Then also now we're learning that they've decided Jared Kushner has brought in the Koch brothers. Now, that might not sound so strange to you, except that the Koch brothers once at one point were strong supporters of Republicans and conservatives. They certainly were Bush supporters. But then as the years have gone by, they have moved more and more to the left, supporting gay marriage, supporting open borders, really, because of their big business interests. They were the ones who spent their money, and I know that for a fact, persuading, as it were, many conservatives to embrace criminal justice reform. The Koch brothers have now been working with Van Jones, the communist Van Jones, the self-identified communist Van Jones. They brought him into their orbit. Now he's their best buddy, along with others. So now we have the Koch brothers who don't want anything good when it comes to conservatives are now being brought under the wing, working with Jared Kushner and Vice President Pence and others. So they're going to work out a deal for us. And you can bet it will be wonderful, don't you think? I'm sure it'll be something we'll all be grateful for when the Koch brothers have their way and Jared gets his way and he uses the magic he used with criminal justice reform to convince his father-in-law, who campaigned on strong criminal enforcement. He said the opposite President Trump did when he was campaigning, and then he compromised himself on criminal justice reform. You know that. Why is that bad? Because they left the impression that this was all about people that, you know, one time had a small amount of drugs and then they were sent to prison for 50 years. And how unjust that is. And especially, it's all happens to minorities and no one else. And so those were the button pushes that they did. And then, of course, they passed criminal justice reform. They got a lot of Christian groups to support it. A lot of our friends supported it. But in fact, it really will be a jailbreak bill. There will be early release of a lot of criminals, violent criminals on our streets. And we just heard that police president, union president, talk about what's happening to police. I'm just the injustice of what we see. And they all in the guise of justice, of course. Justice only to some means some sort of payback to minorities. It doesn't mean justice should be for all people. Justice is what's right. It's what's right and what's wrong. That's God's justice. It's not about payback to any kind of special group, a color or women because they've been oppressed by men. I mean, that's not what justice is. Justice is God's justice. He's the God of all justice. And this whole business of justice, the justice movement, is just... Look, I've got a lot of patience with pagans. I don't have any with Christians who get so far off the track on these things. And we have a ton of Christian leaders and Christian organizations that have gone way off the track on this notion of justice, this misguided notion of justice. So, all right, so here we have Jared involved in this with the Koch brothers. And we yesterday opened the phone lines and I asked you about how you felt about border security, what you were seeing in your own states and communities. And so, interestingly enough, two polls were reported since we last spoke. And John mentioned one of them, and I want to, let's see. Yeah, this is, I want to do this first one first. This is the one he mentioned. So, voters in congressional districts that President Trump won in 2016 but flipped Democratic last November support his border wall and believe Democratic Speaker Nancy Pelosi should have accepted his immigration deal to end the partial government shutdown. A poll of 10 representative districts, some of which Trump won by big margins, but then voted a Democrat into office in 2018, also found that a plurality approved of the president's job performance, 49% to 48%. It's a public opinion strategy survey. It was done for the RNC. By the way, this is an article in the Washington Examiner that I'm reading this synopsis from. What's more, the survey provided to Secrets found that voters in districts in New York, Minnesota, South Carolina, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Maine, Virginia, and New Jersey believe that Trump's immigration compromise dismissed by Pelosi should have been accepted in the shutdown struggle. More voters believe Trump has been more open to compromise on this issue than congressional Democrats. A majority of voters, 54 to 43%, say they support Trump's policies. By 61 to 35, voters support the president's position on border security. By 53 to 43, voters in these dim-held congressional districts support building a border wall or barrier to improve security. 50 to 43% believe that Democrats should have accepted Trump's offer of 3 years of protection for Dreamers in exchange for $5.7 billion in funding for the wall. And so that's just a little smattering of that. And then there's another poll. This was done by an organization called Ear to the Ground, which is a project at the Frontier Lab. And by the way, I'm part of this group, and so is AFA. It's the Ear to the Ground poll. Polled 27. I didn't do the polling. I'm just telling you I support this group. 2,700 Trump voters were polled. Now, these are Trump voters. And the poll shows that nearly half of those voters would abandon President Trump if he fails to secure border security funds. The grassroots activists represented in this survey were fundamental to the president's election. While they are still with him today, it appears the president better build the wall or his support will significantly suffer. And that's a quote from Mark Meckler, who's the president of Citizens for Self-Governance. 60% of Trump voters approved ending the shutdown, but just 43% said Trump was the winner in that long fight with Nancy Pelosi. 95% of Trump voters support declaring a national emergency. 96% of Trump primary voters support declaring a national emergency. And 91% of non-Trump Republican primary voters support declaring a national emergency. Those are different categories of voters, but you can see that that's what they really want the president to do, and that they are really, really still very firmly supported. The first one was Democratic states, swing states. So that really is kind of an amazing poll. I got so much to tell you that I didn't get in, so we're going to continue this discussion. I want to tell you about a new report on non-citizen voting, about a hearing that took place in Washington yesterday on a new proposal called H.R. 1, very dangerous proposal by Democrats. We'll touch on it, and on another day we'll do a full-flung expose on that with J. Christian Adams. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. California State Senate Judiciary Committee Chairwoman Hannah Beth Jackson announced her committee was adopting a new rule banning the use of the traditional binary pronouns he, she, her, or him in hearings. She went on to say, "We're using what my grammar teacher would have had a heart attack over. We're using the phrase they. My grammar teacher's long gone, and I won't be hearing from her." After announcing it, the chairwoman violated her own rule. The irony would be funny, but it shows government won't be content until it controls what we think and say.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Donald Trump has often, and rightly so, been compared to the biblical character of King Cyrus. He might even more accurately be compared to Nehemiah. Nehemiah famously built a wall around the city of Jerusalem because the city was defenseless against marauders. Nehemiah learned several things about building a physical barrier to protect people. Number one, he learned that his city and his nation had bitter enemies who would fiercely oppose anyone who sought to protect it. And he learned the only way to complete such a project is through sheer persistence and the power of prayer. In a similar way, President Trump has implacable adversaries who, because of their disdain for America, are doing everything in their power to stop him. Now, we don't know what the president's prayer life is like, but he needs us to stand in the gap with him and for him through our prayers and support.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
A call to action from American Family Radio.
There's all kind of difficulty in the world, but as the Word of God says, if your brother's in need and you have it within your ability to respond to their need, how can you claim to have love if you allow them to go without? What greater need is there than the need to live? I know life is rough, but it don't have nothing to do with the baby. Don't kill the baby. Don't wait for preborn campaigns. Don't wait for legislation to be passed in your state legislature. Don't wait till Roe versus Wade is overturned. Respond now. I believe with everything in me that we can end this scourge regardless of what they do in the halls of Congress and the halls of the state legislature. Every single family, every single church, go to the local abortion clinics. Let them know that you have people in your churches, people in your family that are willing to take the babies home. They have families that have been dying to take a child home. Don't kill the babies.
Visit AFR.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Communist China is poised to land an unmanned rover on the dark side of the moon. This will be an interesting scientific mission. Like all of China's space ventures, however, it will also have a distinctly military purpose. Specifically, the communist Chinese have made no secret of their intention to dominate what's called the Earth-Moon system to gain strategic advantage. That goal would be greatly facilitated by operations on the moon's far side, where they will be difficult to monitor from Earth. Such hostile activities demonstrate the wisdom of President Trump's decision to create a U.S. Space Force, a capability that's becoming ever more vital to our economic as well as our security interests. Consequently, as Mr. Trump considers candidates to be the next Secretary of Defense, he needs to ensure that his pick recognizes and unequivocally supports America's Space Force. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. So to just continue our discussion about what's happening and the need for border security. I know you're mostly, all of you are convinced about that. Most of the people that listen to American Family Radio are. But you never know. And these are just other things that you need to know about when you're making the case to your friends and family. This is... Over the weekend, the Texas Department of Public Safety released the details of a voter registration analysis showing that 95,000 registered voters are suspected of having registered to vote as non-citizens. Further, they found that 58,000 of those registered voters cast ballots at least once since 1996. This is an article by Daniel Horowitz. The title is "Non-Citizen Voting in Our Elections is a Huge Problem." We'll put this on our Facebook page. Daniel is with Conservative Review. It's Mark Levin's outlet. And so Daniel goes on to say, Attorney General Ken Paxton and Governor Greg Abbott immediately highlighted the importance of this finding and how urgent it is that the state act upon it. The state government is calling on all the counties to send out letters to those people on this list and ask them to respond to an inquiry whether they have indeed become naturalized citizens. The 11-month investigation order by Paxton showed that these 95,000 individuals who applied for driver's licenses as aliens registered to vote at some later date. According to Longview News Journal, the Texas Tribune contacted 13 of 15 counties with the highest numbers of these registered voters. Only one county, Galveston, said it is sending letters immediately. So you see, they're not even getting cooperation in Texas. That doesn't mean they're not going to get it, but I'm just telling you, nobody's rushing to do that. And then Daniel goes on to say, consider the fact that Texas doesn't even automatically register voters. And you see how bad the problem is. Can you imagine what California looks like? A dozen states hand out driver's licenses to illegal aliens, more than a million in California alone, and other states are being forced to do so by the courts. So this is yet another problem that we face. We know we face it, and yet you remember the president shaming people for saying there could be any voter fraud. There's never been any voter fraud in the United States. That he said something crazy like that. And we're supposed to believe this. Oh, yes, of course, there's never been, there's no voter fraud. Our system is airtight, right? Well, that would explain why Democrats are hell-bent on passing what's called H.R. 1. This may be the first time you've heard of this, but you're going to hear a lot more about it. I'm just going to give you a touch of it because Christian Adams will join us maybe next week. He and Hans von Spakovsky testified before a committee in the House yesterday, a hostile committee, because they're democratically led now, fighting against this bill. Let me just give you an idea. It's an attempt. This is a letter written by the Conservative Action Project, signed by American Family Association, as well as many, many others, General Meese and former Attorney General Meese and tons of other people. But this is the story. It's an attempt by House Democrats to fundamentally undermine the American electoral system. While they cloak the bill in terms of restoring democracy and preventing corruption, the legislation has one goal: to protect incumbents at the expense of the First Amendment, federalism, and individual voter integrity. Let me just give you a few bullet points on this. It would allow the Federal Election Commission to track and catalog more of what Americans are saying, register even very small political donations, and make public those who donate to different charitable and nonprofit organizations. It would subject private citizens to intimidation and harassment for their private and political beliefs, much broader than what was done by the IRS in 2013. It would also reassert the ability of the federal government to micromanage state elections through a process known as preclearance. It also, the Federal Election Commission, which is currently a neutral body, would be made up now of partisan politicians, 3-2, guaranteeing a partisan outcome with little accountability. It also includes a 600% government match for political donations, authorizes even more political dollars to campaigns, wants to give a paid holiday for government workers on Election Day, and give additional pay to government bureaucrats to oversee the polls, forces states to implement mandatory voter registration, mandates that states allow felons to vote. You know what? There's a whole long list. I'm just barely getting started. But I wanted you to get an idea of how serious this is. And with they are attacking and strategically our voting system. And if they can't win, fairly, which they haven't been able to up until this new wave of the popularity of socialism by our young people, they haven't been able to win. They weren't able to defeat Donald Trump, but they're going to make sure that never happens again. So we'll be talking about that very soon. We have a group of unhinged people serving in Congress. You know that, don't you? And some people that want to be president now are unhinged. Peter Ducey was talking to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about Kamala Harris's promise to put everyone on Medicare and to do away with private health insurance, which 150 million Americans are currently on, so that we all have the privilege of working through the federal government to try to get our medical insurance. I've already explained why that's a problem. And so he asked Ocasio-Cortez how she felt about that. She said, I think that's the direction we absolutely need to go. I think one of the things that we're hearing right here in our, that we're really discovering in our hearings is that we, the real issue with our health care system is that we're trying to have it both ways. We're trying to have a half of a free market system, half of more public system. And it is in the half commitments that our systems are breaking down. Really? You want to see health insurance break down? You give it to the federal government. Go to your local driver's license facility and see what government does when they run agencies. Try to call Social Security. Try to call, I don't know, the VA. The government fails. Try the post office. The federal government, it is too big. It is too big for them to run something so personal, important, and important to the American people. But we do have crazies now in the Congress, and they are, they're doing, they want to do all kinds of nefarious things. I want to tell you that, where is this thing? The article I want to share, oh, here we go. This is what else they did yesterday. The House Committee on Natural Resources has now decided they want to remove So Help Me God from the oath taken in front of key House, under front of the committee. So they want it to just be, do you solemnly swear to affirm under penalty of law that the testimony that you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Also, they want to change the rules expanding the committee's authority over natural gas in Alaska and fossil fuel resources. In response to this, House Republican Conference Chair Liz Cheney, she's Dick Cheney's daughter. Liz is a powerhouse. I really like Liz. I think she's gone a little wobbly on some things, but so I want to make that clear. But no one's more articulate than Liz is. This is what she said. It is incredible, but not surprising that the Democrats would try to remove God from committee proceedings in one of their first acts in the majority. They really have become the party of Karl Marx. And you will remember that back in 2012 on the floor of the Democratic National Convention, remember they removed God, any mention of God in the platform? They removed any recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital? And then the leadership of the Republican Democratic Party were concerned that this might not be popular with the American people. They decided to try to put it back in. And Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa called for the vote and people booed and he had to call for the vote three times until he could discern that the eyes had it. So it's just amazing. And then, of course, we have all of our new Muslim members of Congress swearing in on other things besides the Bible, the Quran, and various things. Michigan Rep. Rashida Tlaib and Minnesota Ilhan Omar have been pushing unbelievable things. Omar, for example, wrote in 2012 that Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel. And Tlaib, I've got an entire article, which I'm probably not going to be able to get. I'll give you as much of this as I can. This is by Peter Hassan from the Daily Caller. We'll put this on our Facebook page so that you'll have this. Rashida Tlaib's ties to anti-Semitism run deeper than previously known. She is the one who called the president the MF. She was that one. From Michigan, one of Representative Rashida Tlaib's fundraisers, Maher Abdel Kader, has been repeatedly promoting anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. She is also a member of a Facebook group where Abdel Kader and other members have shared anti-Semitic doesn't even capture it. I'm going to give you an idea of what they say. One video Abdel Kader shared with the group accused Jews of secretly controlling the media and exaggerating the Holocaust. Tlaib also has ties with other anti-Israel figures, and she's questioned the loyalty of pro-Israel Republicans. All right, but let's get a little bit more flesh on this. She belongs to a Facebook group called Palestinian American Congress. And they have a video where they claim that Jews aren't actually Jewish. They invented their historical claim, and they secretly control the media. In the video, Jews are described as satanic. When questioned as to whether 6 million Jews actually died in the Holocaust, the narrator says, research the truth about the Holocaust, and you'll definitely start to question what you thought you knew. So the video was shared on a personal Facebook, and this is Tlaib. She belongs to that Facebook group, Palestinian American Congress. She doesn't just belong to it. She actually boasts and posts about it, posts about her anti-Semitic connections. He, by the way, in his videos, shared multiple times about various comments about Jews. He actually insists that Jews aren't actually from Israel. He accused Israelis of training their children to terrorize Palestinian civilians. And by the way, Tlaib has been a member of that Facebook group since February 2018. The group has 11,000 members. Tlaib presented Abdelkader with a medal showing her appreciation for his help with her campaign. She posted multiple pictures of herself with Abdelkader on Facebook during the campaign and emphasized how important his support was to her. This article gives all the pictures of them smiling, hugging each other. From the bottom of my heart, thank you, Maher Abdelkader, and Ahlam Shabra for coming in from out of town to work a polling location. It means so much to have you by my side. One of the groups that she's worked with says about Israel, they will be wiped off the map soon, inshallah, God willing. She's also posted a picture with Palestinian activist Abbas Hamida, a supporter of Hezbollah, which is a terrorist organization who believes Israel shouldn't exist, and he was at her swearing-in ceremony. So those are the kind of people, and I have just really scratched the surface, serving us in Congress. And then it's not just in the U.S. Congress. It's also in state houses. This video has just surfaced. It's a delegate, Kathy Tran. She's the first Vietnamese delegate in Virginia. And she stood on the floor, I believe, yesterday and said this.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester.
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth. Would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman
would make at that point. I understand that. I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Kathy Tran, delegate of Virginia, saying that in the House of Delegates in Virginia, which was the proud home of Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson and so many other patriots who wrote the Constitution about the right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, I just think that I don't want to overuse a phrase. Can you just imagine the horror of these men if they knew what they had created and what's come out of the freedom that has been established for the American people? It was not freedom to do harm and freedom to kill at random will and freedom to destroy your country. And yet they warned us, the founding fathers, about the dangers of democracy. I remember what Benjamin Franklin said, something about how wonderful democracy was. He said, if you can keep it. And so we know that we are in trouble. I want to give you some good news. President Trump tweeted just this week his approval of promoting Bible literacy in classes in schools yesterday. You can imagine that will be very controversial, but can you imagine if the children in our public schools just could be exposed to the notion that there is a God and that there are rules regarding human behavior, including thou shalt not kill? Imagine the power of that, and that is something our president is supporting, and I'm grateful for that. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.